Good afternoon, Tom. This morning, I received some questions about afterlife, and you've spoken a lot about that. Let me read a few of the excerpts of what I've received. There are more and more questions from people who want to believe in an afterlife and also want to communicate through the media and ask themselves whether there can be real communication with the deceased. If I have understood your theory correctly, then you can only pull information out of the database. That's one of the metaphors that you use in your science theory of another reality, but no real communication can be carried on, which would also mean there would be no real afterlife, just an archive with expressions, experiences, memories. It would then have nothing to do with a life after death, where you can develop yourself further, support others in the virtual world, and still exist. Of course, many would be displeased because there had been hopes of an afterlife. Could you expand a bit on that, beginning with your theory and clearing up some of the definitions? Yeah. It seems that those are the key aspects of this.
Sure. And you know, it depends on how you define these things. Is there any real communication? Do we have a real afterlife? Defining the real and what those things mean. I could answer yes to all those questions. Yes, yes, yes. You are talking to the deceased. Yes, there is an afterlife. Yes, all those questions I could say yes to. I also could say no to all those questions. There is no afterlife. It just depends on how you define the words we're talking about. So let's define them carefully. And that is in MBT, it's a theory based on consciousness. Consciousness is fundamental. It's all about consciousness. Okay, now, to answer these questions and whether you get a yes or a no for the answer depends on what you identify with, who you think you are. If you think that you are the avatar, then if you're asking, does that avatar go on into an avatar's afterlife where that avatar, Suzy Q, continues to be Suzy Q and think like Suzy Q and have Suzy Q's memory, Suzy Q's fear, Suzy Q's attitudes and ideas and experience, beliefs, her ego, you know, it's just all Suzy Q. It's just that avatar continues to go on as that avatar. Then no, there is no afterlife for the avatar. Now, if you identify yourself as consciousness, you're not an avatar, you're consciousness. You're the choice maker for the avatar. The avatar doesn't actually exist. The avatar is just a computation out of a computer, just like in our computer games. If we play the Sims and we've got a Sims character, that Sims character doesn't really exist. It's just information displayed on a computer screen. Okay, so it doesn't exist. So from that viewpoint, that no, you're not the avatar, you are consciousness. So if you identify yourself with consciousness, then yes, there is an afterlife. Yes, consciousness survives the death of the avatar. Yes, consciousness goes on. Yes, consciousness continues to learn and grow and have experiences. Yes, when you talk to a person who's dead, you're talking directly with consciousness. Consciousness that's constrained by that dead person's information. Consciousness itself is information. Okay, so by that I mean that the person who was an avatar had certain attitudes, ideas, again, fear, belief, egos, things it knew, experience. Also had its own ignorance, things it didn't know, you know, things it wasn't aware of. It was a limited set of experience. Okay, now the larger conscious system can limit itself to that set of experience. So Suzy Q dies. Suzy Q had a limited set of experience. The larger conscious system will limit itself to that set of Suzy Q's experience and talk with a medium, talk with anybody who talks to dead people. And they will get exactly the same thing that they would get if they were talking to Suzy Q in the flesh. All of Suzy Q's opinions, her attitudes, her feelings, her memory, her cares, her likes, her dislikes, her loves, it's all there. But it's the consciousness system playing Suzy Q, if you like. Now, why would the system do that? The system does that for the benefit of the people who are still here in this virtual reality as avatars. They don't want to let Suzy Q go. They want to continue conversations with Suzy Q. They want to talk to dead Aunt Suzy, ask her opinions, get her thoughts on things, ask her about the nature of reality, confide in her. They still want that connection, okay? And because they need it and it's helpful for them and their own growth, the system provides it to them for that reason. So that's how that works. So it depends. If you see yourself as consciousness, yes, then you can speak to dead people. You do live on in an afterlife, and that afterlife finds you growing and learning and becoming. Okay, now let's look at some of the ideas. People who identify as the avatar, they don't identify as consciousness. They think that they are an avatar, and that avatar just happens to be conscious. So they want that avatar to go on forever. And that's their idea. And I think the person writing the question, that was their idea of an afterlife. That's the real afterlife, you see. Well, in their mind. Well, look at how limited that real afterlife would be and how much it could accomplish as opposed to you being consciousness and going on in that direction, right? We have two different ways of looking at it. So let's just take the idea that you are the avatar and that the avatar dies and the avatar continues to live. So the avatar is immortal, not consciousness now, but the avatar is immortal. If that's the case, then you continue on with that same set of limitations, that same set of beliefs, the same set of fears, ego, the same lack of knowledge and information. I mean, any individual doesn't know everything. They just know a little bit of things. If you basically were a brain surgeon and did medicine, then you don't know anything about growing corn. You don't know anything about engineering. You don't know anything about 1,000 different subjects. You're very limited in what you know and what you understand because you've just had that life experience that Suzy Q, who died, has. So now that is going to go on. So those limited experiences, as we know, when you get things that conflict with your sense of reality, conflict with your beliefs, you just blow them off. You don't consider them because they can possibly be true because you have a sense of what the truth is. That's why those limitations are a problem. That's why it's so hard to grow up and change yourself, because as those changes come at you, the things that don't fit with your beliefs, you just blow them away. Well, that can't be true. I just won't accept that. So the limitations tend to stay with you, and you end up being stuck in that same rut, and trying to work yourself out of that is a very difficult problem. And it would require now that the LCS have another whole virtual reality where these avatars interact with each other. So you're asking the LCS to produce another whole VR where dead avatars interact with other dead avatars. Now you'd have to ask, well, what would that virtual reality be like? Do those dead avatars have relationships? Are they romantic? Do they have jobs? Do they have to go to work every day? What do they do? Just hang out like in a big chat room and just chit-chat with each other forever? I mean, what's that reality going to be like? Is it going to be just like this one, but now it's only dead people who have died that you hang out with? And all the people that have ever died, all the way back to the caveman, dragging his knuckles as he walks and whatever, with very little information, he's there too, just as his avatar, still dragging his knuckles when he walks. And, you know, all the people out of the first century, second century, all those warlords and those mindsets, those peasants that were there, that were the majority of the people, they'd all still be there and be themselves, all trying to grow up interacting together in this dead person's reality.
You've brought up a good point about the inefficiency of something mm-hmm. like that, of the avatar being carrying on. I think it is not comforting for people to think that they aren't going to carry on. They're comfortable with themselves and their beliefs. But in your theory, diversity and efficiency is the concept that continues us to evolve us. Is that right? Yeah.
Well, yes. But see, it becomes a difficult problem. All right. So if we have this reality where the dead people live and interact and grow and so on, and it's got everybody in it who's ever lived at all. Now just think of what that does. Right now we have about 8.5 to 9 billion people. In 100 years, every one of those people that's here now will be dead because we don't tend to live more than 100 years. Just 100 years, there will be 9 more billion people there. Now, the next 100 years, there'll be another 9. By then, it'll probably be 10 or 15 billion people. And then the next 100 years after that, there'll be another 10, 15, 20 billion people. You see what happens? It gets to be a very crowded place very soon. And these people come from such different cultures. The culture people walked around in the 1500s isn't at all like the culture we walk around in. The beliefs, the ideas that they had aren't at all like that. So it's just this idea of this big chat room where people exist and interact with each other as dead people. Well, it either has to be another physical reality like this one, where they do have relationships and married and have more children and they go on with that sort of thing. But it's a very, very large place that every 100 years gets billions of new people. Or it has to be more like just the big chat room where they just interact with each other kind of socially, like a big cocktail party, you know, mix and mingle, talk and so on. Well, cocktail parties are hard enough to put up with, even for an hour or two. Can you imagine having a lifetime of being stuck in a cocktail party? Whew. You know, that just wouldn't work out very well. And it wouldn't be a real good growth situation because cocktail party atmospheres tend to build cliques and they tend to build us versus them. And you have a lot of people there who aren't very grown, right? Because typically people aren't very grown. So it's not like these people, once they die, suddenly, have a lot higher quality to them. They're still the same as they were. They have to outgrow it. But now outgrowing it in this cocktail party environment is going to be much harder than outgrowing it in the environment that consciousness would have. So you see, it's just a big problem. It doesn't work well. It requires a lot more resources from the LCS, and it just grows and gets out of control. So that's kind of what's wrong with it. That's why it's inefficient. That's why the system doesn't do that. So instead, thinking that you are the avatar and you as the avatar being immortal and going on, think of you as consciousness. You are a piece of consciousness. You're playing an avatar. That avatar doesn't actually exist. It's just like your Sims character, just like your elf in World of Warcraft. It's a computer creation that helps you see how interactions take place. You, the consciousness, you're the player. Now, when you have that idea, then it gets a lot simpler, a lot more efficient, and a lot more effective. Because now, when your avatar dies, well, you just get another avatar and you continue to play. And that avatar is not stuck in the same rut. Doesn't come with the same history and the same memories, the same hurts, the same joys. It doesn't get stuck in that. It starts over. It's got a whole new avatar to work with a whole new set of experiences, which gives it a take, like all the baggage that people carry, you know, all the dislikes, all the slights, all the fact that they were abused as children, all of that stuff gets dropped by the doorstep. And now you just take the quality of that consciousness and you start over. So all the baggage gets jettisoned and you get to make a whole new set of choices in a completely different set of experiences. That's called diversity.
Doesn't this diversity allow you to, I mean, here in this lifetime, you think, you know, I have a lot of experience now, decades into a lifetime, and I would love to be able to do this, to be a writer, a dancer, a musician. I'd love to live in a different part of the world. That is part of the diversity that you would be allowed to experience, and that would contribute to the LCS's lowering entropy. Is that right?
Well, sure. Well, see, what you're trying to do here is grow up, lower your entropy. And to do that by taking the same package and trying to run it forever is an extremely inefficient way to do that. It's much more efficient, and you grow up much more quickly with a diverse set of experiences. You see, you're not that limited. That dead Susie Q, her avatar had a very limited set of experiences. Of all the experiences that a human could have, it has just maybe a 1/10 of 1% of all the experiences that were available. Well, it's just like in the old days, there were people who had traveled and people who didn't. You know, let's go back into the 1600s, 1700s. Travel was very expensive and very difficult to do. So mainly only wealthy people got around. And what we called those people is sophisticated if they traveled and provincial if they didn't. One had a bigger picture view of things. One had a bigger understanding of how everything worked and who they were relative to all the various things they had seen. You just grow up with that diversity. Whereas if you'd never traveled and you stay home, well, you're still you, but you don't have as big a picture. You have a little picture. You don't see things in context. You just see things through your own set of experiences. Your experiences are very small. Well, that's the way it is. If you are consciousness and the consciousness goes on and goes through different experience sets, you become much more sophisticated, much more educated, much more grown up, because you've seen lots of things. You've been every race. You've been male, you've been female. You've been poor, you've been rich. You've been healthy, you've been diseased. You only lived to be 10 years old before dying of hunger, and you ended up being wealthy. You've been through all those things. And all of that has helped you grow up and see the world from a bigger perspective. So you take all of that rich experience and the fact that, you know, that's a plus, and the fact that you get to jettison all the old baggage that you'd like to get rid of. Well, between those two things, you're just so much more efficient in growing up. If your avatar doesn't continue on, but that you as consciousness continue on playing different avatars, and it's so much more efficient for the larger conscious system, because it only has to keep this one virtual reality going. And that is, you know, what we call the physical universe. So there's one virtual reality, and you keep going back into that virtual reality in a different set of situations to help you see the world from a bigger picture and grow up. Those are the differences between those two. So one is inefficient in every way. It's inefficient for the system. It's inefficient for the individual. And it's hard to imagine being in a cocktail party for the rest of your life. That just doesn't seem to be a very good thing. Or the system would have to have a whole set of things for you to do. And now it would be this big system that grows by many billions every century, You know, this billion just keeps growing so fast, and it would be of all kinds with all sorts of people mixed. They're not just all from similar cultures. They're from all sorts of cultures, and they had to grow up then, you know, the caveman dragging his knuckles and the, you know, and the sophisticated person, they're all in this big mix together. And what would they do? They'd form cliques. They'd group together according to the people who were like them. And it would be a big us versus them. A lot of egos would grow. A lot of dysfunction would grow. They would dislike, those stupid knuckle draggers. You know, they're all they do is they're just violent. You know, they don't. And it would be just, it wouldn't necessarily be a happy situation. So if you don't have it at that level, it's the cocktail party level where it's just things interacting without that kind of structure. It all just doesn't work very well, Donna. It just works so much better if you see yourself as a consciousness, not an avatar.
Of course.
And once you realize that that avatar doesn't actually exist, there is no avatar. That's just eye candy for you to look at so that you can better understand the connections and interactions going on. That's the nature of a multiplayer game. So the avatar, it's not like, oh, the poor avatar dies. It's like, no, the poor avatar didn't exist at all. Pretty picture on a screen. So you don't worry when your elf gets run over by a barbarian and dies. It's not like we, you know, have a funeral and we go out and grieve for a week because our elf died. The elf dies. Okay, you go get another elf or you resurrect that one and you go get back in the game. That makes the game fun. That makes the game interesting.
Let's go back to the concern with the databases being just archives. Now, those databases of all the information that was that avatar, all the rich memories, emotions, and things like that, that's kept by the LCS for a particular reason, for the reason of comforting the loved ones of the deceased who need some reassurance that they will go on, but not as that avatar, as consciousness, as you said. Say the avatar was constrained in this reality by unfortunate circumstances. Isn't it more comforting to the loved ones of the deceased to know that that avatar will now be able to soar in a different and more richer experience, something where he or she is not constrained? Tell me a little bit about the purpose of that database and how that is not just an archive thing, but something necessary for the LCS.
Okay. It's not necessarily that database exists just so that we can talk to dead people. It's got a lot of other value as well. But the database exists because the future, the probable future database is necessary for the system to render the virtual reality. It has to keep track of the probabilities of the possibilities because that's how it knows what to render. So in order to do that, it creates this database of all the things that are possible and their probability. Okay, now up to a certain level of interest, it keeps all of that stuff. And then as time goes by, that database that was in the future becomes past. So we end up that we have this past database. Well, why not just erase it and just keep a future probability database? That's all the system needs in order to render what's going on. But throwing away the past throws away an awful big opportunity to learn. The past is important. That's why history exists. That's why there are such people as historians and people write this stuff down. You can learn from the past. You can use the past. So the system doesn't just delete that data after it goes through the now moment and becomes a past moment. So we have all of the information of everything that could have happened and the possibility that it would have. And then there's just one little thread that runs through that, which is actually what did happen. So that past database is much more than just what did happen. That's just a one line through it. It's everything that could have happened and the probability that it would have. So you have this database that's just left over as time goes on, but it's very, very valuable. And one of the ways it's valuable is so that the living can get the information, the knowledge, and often the consolation of the dead. That's one of the things it's used for. And the people who help facilitate that are often called mediums, right? Mediums make the contact because they've learned how to get data out of that database. They've learned how to use their intent and make that connection. So it's a good thing. If you are concerned that, you know, Aunt Susie or Uncle Fred who passed away, that they're okay, you know, that everything worked right, the transition was fine, and you worry about them, well, you can contact them and they'll tell you, oh yeah, everything's fine, we're doing great. And you can have conversations and they can help you raise your children. You can ask them questions and they can talk about current events. They can do everything that they would be able to do if they didn't die, okay? So think of the entity that a medium contacts, your dead Aunt Susie Q. Think of that. Well, that entity that this medium is talking to is really the larger consciousness system, okay, producing a character just the way your Aunt Susie Q was. And it can do that because it has all that information. That database isn't just a sterile database of what Susie Q did, like our histories are. Oh, well, what did Winston Churchill do? Where was he born? You know, at what year and what did he do? That's a very sterile thing compared to this database. This database would be everything that Winston Churchill thought, every emotion that he ever had, every idea that ever passed through his mind, not just what he did, but things he thought about he didn't do, you know, all of those things. What did he dream about? You know, I mean, it's all there to help the person who's still in this virtual reality, still has an avatar living here, to help them get bigger pictures, to help them deal with things. It's not about the dead person. It's about the live person still struggling with that free will, trying to make better choices, you see? So that's how that works. So we have these databases and they're used for all sorts of things. Anybody, you don't have to be a medium, can get into these databases. Mediums just learned how to do this one thing generally, and that's get data out of that database about people. But you are consciousness. You're not an avatar. There is no avatar. Avatar is a computed thing. It doesn't really exist. You're consciousness. And you as consciousness have complete access to this database. You can look at those things. You can go visit the dead. You don't have to just have a medium talk to them. You can go visit, sit down at a table, you know, have a beer with them. You can interact with them much more fully than you can through using a medium.
I know we have. You've taught this in your classes, and people have had successes with that, a lot of successes with that. Can you tell us a little bit about, this is very in-depth research and theory. Can you tell us a little bit about how you discovered these databases and how you discovered how this reality works in terms of the afterlife?
Well, when I first was able to control, I shouldn't say control, really discipline my consciousness to the point that it would do what I wanted it to do when I wanted it to do it, which means I could go out of body or I could get around in these databases, you know, on demand as I wanted to, when I wanted to. And I got good enough at it that I realized that it was something that was unchanging. It was something that was there for me to explore. And my first thought was that the past was still alive and interactive going on, you know, that past was still there. And I knew that that was a logical inconsistency. You know, there's a logical problem with that. It's something that doesn't work out rationally. It's illogical. But at that point, I wasn't too concerned with logic because I didn't know enough yet to be logical. when you don't know enough yet and you're just a beginner, logic is the next step. It's not really where you are. So my beginning step was that past was a live place, because I could go there in that past and I could see people interacting. I could still see the Roman soldiers guarding the wall. I could see all kinds of things playing out, people, interaction, stuff going on. So it wasn't like reading a book, like that kind of database where everything's very static. This is the way it was. It was like it was alive. It was like watching a movie of that. People doing things, loving, fighting, doing all the things that people do, you know? So it seemed like it was a live, ongoing space. But I did experiments there to try to figure out how it worked. And one of the experiments I did that I think was probably the beginning of an aha moment for me in that was that I and a group of people, and I think these were like family members, good friends. These were people I knew, but they were all together and I was part of them. Now, my avatar has let the consciousness go free, right? Because that's what going out of body is. You kind of let the avatar lies down and be still and stops doing stuff. And the consciousness now is free to do things. So the consciousness goes down and connects with these people. And these people, this was historical, you know, so these people existed and I was with them in this movie, like I was talking about. And I decided, could I make a difference? If I could convince those people to do something differently than they did, would then I could I see a difference then in this world? You know, the butterfly effect kind of a thing. If I made this person, you know, if I made sure that Paul Revere never got on his horse and told the people the British were coming, you know, what difference would that make? You see? So I could intervene and see what happened. Well, I tried those kinds of things, and of course, nothing happened. It didn't change what was going to go on here at all. The butterfly effect is just Hollywood. That's not the way it works. History isn't still going on, and if you change something in the past, then the future automatically changes. I learned that right away. It doesn't work that way. It's just good. It's good, you know, literature material and makes good movies, but it isn't the way the world works. And then the other thing I tested was that, you know, you can interact with people, you can say certain things, and these people will react to it. And I found that I could change the way I interacted with the people. And if I changed the way I interacted with the people, it would change the way they'd interact. It would bring up different things. It would change the conversation. So I knew that I was a part of that system, but it didn't reflect back up to the present. So then I realized that it was that I was in a like in a movie with these characters, but it was just something that was been created for me interacting with them and the changes that I made. And I also realized that if I said exactly the same thing in exactly the same way, I'd get exactly the same result. So if I'd go into this place and say, Paul, you can't make that ride to tell everybody the British are coming. You can't do that. And I knocked him down and I tied him up and, you know, tied his legs and hands behind his back and made him not do that. You know, the things, if I did the same thing, it would cause them to all react the same way. But see, real people with free will aren't like that. People with free will, you can say the same thing to them, and they'll react differently because they have free will. They don't have to say the same thing. It's not deterministic. So eventually I realized that if I gave it the exact same input from the exact same situation, I didn't get different responses that you would if they had free will. It just didn't do that. It did seem like determinism. I do the same thing, I get the same result. If I did something different, I'd get a different result. But if I do that same different thing again, I'd get the same different result, if you see what I mean. So that told me that it was a database indeed. And that then I realized that I also could ask for not only to see the things that happened, but I could get off of that thin thread that was what actually happened, and I could get into the possibilities, the things that could have happened. And then I'd ask the system, oh, instead of picking the most likely thing to happen, pick the second most likely thing as a response, or the 10th most likely thing as a response. And with that change in my intent, I'd get a totally different reaction from the people, just because my intent changed as to how I was querying the database. So that's how I came to realize that, oh, this is a database, but it's a database that is like being in a movie. It's not like looking in a book kind of database. It's a database of being there and interacting with people, and they interact with you. So that was just part of the research I did in trying to understand how all this worked that let me realize that indeed, this was a very amazing database that had depth, you know, in-depth information about people and could be queried not only for what would be the most likely response, which is the highest probability of what they would say. See, it's all based on probability. Everything in there, all the possible ways that could have happened. Remember, we looked at all the possibilities and then the probability of all those. So all the possibilities had already been run through. So when I went by changing things, I just run through a different set of possibilities. If I said this, you know, I'd run through a different set of possibilities. So it was all there. It's just that based on my query, it would go out and select actions and interactions based on my query. So that's how I figured it out. Now, how long did it take me to figure that out? I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, you know. This was just one thing I was working on as I was doing research in this.
I think what people don't understand, they understand that you're a physicist, that you wrote a big theory of everything. But the reason that you were able to do this is because you're also an in-depth consciousness explorer with repeated experiments in the kinds of things that you put into your book. None of your things are guesses or possibilities. It is something that only you made fact through your experience and your experiments. Am I right to say that all of those things are from your own experience?
The way I did that, you know, it was in the 1970s. I went out and started working with Bob Monroe. So then it wasn't until the mid to late 1990s that I was able to write the book. So all of the time between 1970 and 1996 or 95, all of that time was me doing research, trying to understand how things work. Change a variable, see what happens. Change and hold that variable still, change another variable, see what happens. Change it again, see what happens. And that takes time. It's very tedious work. And you have to just little bit at a time, you start gaining understanding. So when I thought that I had this whole set of consciousness facts, this is how consciousness works, then I had this another whole set of facts that this is how our virtual reality works, you know, because I'm a physicist. That's what physicists do. How does it work? So I had both of those sets of facts that I had uncovered. The consciousness facts I uncovered with my own personal research and experiments. So I looked at all of those facts and said, well, what model will answer all the facts? All the ones from consciousness, all the ones from the physical reality. What set of facts explain it all? And that's when I sat down to write My Big Toe, because I thought I had this idea of how to explain everything, not just the objective world and not just the subjective world, but a bigger understanding that overarched both of those. So it explained both the subjective and the objective world equally. So if you want to know why such and such happens in the physical world, well, we call that physics, right? That's how that world works. And we have that as science. And if you want to know why you're upset because your Aunt Susie died, or why your life is such a struggle, or why happiness and joy is not a main thing in your life, well, you can figure that out too. It's just as the same as doing that physics and figuring out how that physical world works. You can understand the science of the subjective world and see how that works as well. So there's science now on both sides of that as far as understanding why things are the way they are, how they work, you know, what do you have to do to make them better? So it's clear now in both the subjective and the objective world, there's a science that covers both of it. And that's basically what the My Big Toe is. So yes, it started from a set of objective facts and a set of subjective facts. And mostly there are no subjective facts for most people, but I created them through my own, 35 years of research. I created those subjective facts just by trial and error and seeing what happened, what was connected to what, how does one thing affect another, which is the same way people figured it out in the physical world, right? It's the same process. That's how science is done. It's, you know, it's trial and error, and you've tried to figure out what affects other things and why. So yes, that's where it comes from. And the reason that there aren't a whole lot of people competing with me with this book is there's just not a whole lot of people who have both sets of skills. You have to be able to research within consciousness to explore the consciousness from the inside, and you have to be able to understand physics as well. So that's just my, you know, it's not that I'm so brilliant. It's basically that I'm so lucky. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time to do all those things. They just came to me as I was in the right place to do them.
You wanted to know how reality worked. Well, I hope we have shed some light on this topic of the database, and that it is a little bit more than just an archive, and how it works in the afterlife situation. This has been fascinating. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Well, you know, the good news is that your consciousness, you're not an avatar, your consciousness. Avatars don't really exist except as computations. But you, being consciousness, are immortal. You get to go on and on and on. And your goal is to learn and grow. And the more you learn and grow, the more you find a bigger picture and understanding that allows you to be happy and joyful and well-connected and have good relationships, and all of that stuff that everybody would like to have becomes easier and easier and more likely as you grow up, as you lower your entropy. So that's kind of the good news for people, is that it's a very positive process. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, I hate this. I don't want to ever come back and do this again. It's so awful. That's not really the case. It's just because you have so much fear and so many beliefs and ego that you're struggling with. But in time, you get rid of that stuff. And as you get rid of it, life is good. It's satisfying. And you enjoy it. It's a challenge. It's a game that you're playing. And it takes skill and perseverance and effort, you know, to do well in this game. But it's fun. Even when it hurts, it's still fun. It still works. So that's the good news. As consciousness, we grow up. As an avatar, well, we're just a calculation, and there's not a lot of future there. When that avatar is done, it's done. So when Uncle Susie and Uncle Susie, right? When Aunt Susie and Uncle Fred pass on, that avatar is just retired. There'll never be another Susie or Uncle Fred. They were a one-off. They made their choices. They learned. They grew. They loved. They cared. And their consciousness was better off because of it. And that consciousness went on to then be other people and other people and other relationships and more loved ones and more wonderful experiences, helping each other grow up. You see, that's the thing. That's the positive thing going on. It's not like take a very limited Aunt Susie and make her deal with those limitations forever. You know, that wouldn't be very profitable. Though it might in the end, after, you know, 10 or 20 times as much time, it still might work out, but it's just inefficient. It's not necessary. The system works very well the way it is, and it's kind of optimized the way it is. You have to look at this larger conscious system and realize it's a smart, conscious system. It's aware. It's not just a machine. And it has over, a billion years? Our years, you know, time is a little different. That's just, time is just our time here. So I'll just say a billion years. It has over a lot of time optimize the system for getting the maximum amount of growth out of the minimum amount of resources. That's called effectiveness and efficiency. And then this is the system that we have. So if it were more efficient to take those avatars and put them in another virtual reality and whatever, if that worked better, that's what we'd be doing. It would be that way. It's not that way because that isn't the efficient and effective way. And as much as we really want our avatar to continue on forever, that is not how we learn. That's not how we grow. That is not how we can best express who we are in new situations and learn from those new situations. So it's just not the effective way to run a consciousness system. The consciousness system is efficient and effective, and it's not heartless. It's not like, oh, that's so heartless. You have these avatars and then they just die and nothing happens after that. It's not heartless. You're not an avatar. Stop identifying as an avatar. You're consciousness. And the whole system is made to help you succeed as consciousness, not to help you succeed as an avatar. That's you being confused about who you really are. You are consciousness, and the system is optimized for you as consciousness. Even if you think it's a horrible system and you want to get out of it, that's just a very provincial little local picture you have because of the struggles you're having with your fear and your ego and your beliefs. You'll get over that in time. Just persevere. You know, get somebody will pat you on the rump and send you back into the game. You know, just wipe off your tears and get back in there and play. And you will, and eventually you'll grow up and you'll see the beauty in the system and how loving and caring the system is. So that's the good news.
Well, I know you've experienced that beauty, and you have, and you're here to teach that to others. And I thank you very much. Thank you very much for this, Tom.
You're welcome.